Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Sister Cordera Aisha Muhammad for Religion Means Alive. Today's date is October 5th, 2015. Today's topic is marriage in Islam. What's the process? You know, as I did last week, I did the whole show on divorce, and I thought that I would get that out the way first and foremost, so that we could, you know, focus on marriage, something that's positive, something that, you know, half the deen of a Muslim, that it's part of our religion, that it's something that, you know, we should strive to seek. So I chose to do divorce first and marriage second. First and foremost, let me give praise to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for giving me wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to be able to bring these types of shows to you with these particular topics. You know, Saturday I did the show on mental illness and Islam and, you know, different ways to handle it, different ways to go about it, different avenues of, you know, seeking treatment and so forth and so on. So I hope that was a positive show for everyone. I did get a lot of feedback, positive feedback off of that show. So I was greatly pleased with the results of that particular show. And in the future, if, you know, anyone, you know, has a topic that you would like for me to do, I have no problem with doing those shows. If you present the topic to me, and or even if you want to be interviewed on the show, you know, I'm always looking to find people within the community to be able to interview, to highlight and showcase what your particular talent is, what is it that you do, how are you benefiting, you know, the community, is it positive, is it something that, you know, we would find a benefit in, and so forth and so on. So if you have topics for the show, you know, different things in general, you can email me at qamrma@gmail.com. Contact me on Facebook, Qadira Aisha Muhammad. Instagram, I'm QAM_RMA2015 on Instagram, and all various social networks. If you do like the hashtag Religion Means Alive, you should be able to find me out there somehow, some way. To get in contact with me, feel free to inbox me if you do. Just some quick housekeeping tips. If you want to speak, if you have a question, feel free to dial in at 805-727-7013 and press 1, and I'll put you through. Also, if you are online, because we stream online live, if you want to speak, just press 1. I'll see it on my dashboard, and then I'll be able to recognize you and bring that through so that we can acknowledge you and hear your question or your response. You know, marriage is a tricky, a lot of people don't understand the process, and even being Muslim. So, you know, I'm doing this particular call on marriage so that not only can Muslims, new Shahadas or new reverts to the Islamic religion, can understand what the marriage process is, it's also for those who are not Muslim and were just interested in, you know, hearing what the marriage process is. It's fairly simple, similar to, you know, like, you know, the Christian way of courting and then getting engaged and then getting married. It's similar in that sense, but, you know, it's a different process. You know, we don't court or date without a chaperone if you're seeking to marry someone. So, you know, it's certain rules and regulations that you have to abide by and adhere to in order to fulfill the requirements on a religious basis. It's we do everything for the sake of Allah to earn his pleasure and not his anger. So we as Muslims have to adhere to these specific guidelines and rules and tenets. It's not just something, you know, somebody made up or somebody wants you to do, like your family or your friends. No, these are things that are outlined in the Quran and also the Hadith or the Sunnah of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. These are specific guidelines for the men and also for the women to follow. And they are strict guidelines. There's no leeway in between these. So whatever is stated in the Quran or the Hadith, we have to follow that. And if we have questions about what the statement means in Quran, we seek to get a better understanding through tafsir. And tafsir is understanding or interpreting the meaning of the Quran. Also with the Hadith, you can break it down, and usually scholars or students of knowledge who are well versed in Hadith or and Islamic studies can decipher that information for you. So, you know, if it's something that's unclear or we don't understand, we seek those references to get a better understanding on whatever it is that we're searching for. And for tonight, it is marriage in Islam. What is the process? So, you know, a lot of people get confused about, you know, the whole marriage process, what happens, what it entails, and so forth and so on. So I'll start off by explaining, like, from the basics, what the basics are for getting married. So for the men, men can marry once they're of age, pubescent, if they have the means to seek and obtain a wife, they can, the financial means, and also, you know, you want to be knowledgeable in Islam when seeking a wife. So if they have those qualifications, they can go and seek a wife. Now, the difference between the women and the men in Islam, and I'll break it down for the women so that you understand it's more clear on why, you know, certain things are certain ways in Islam versus Christianity. For the men can marry a woman of the book. And what we mean by the woman of the book means she could be either Christian or Jew. He can also marry a Muslim woman, of course. That's, you know, clear, clear and understood. But he has the option to marry a woman of the book. But there are certain qualifications that that woman must meet in order for him to marry them. They must be chaste. And there's other things that would qualify the woman of the book, meaning a Christian or a Jew, for it to be halal or correct or agreeable for him to marry them. For the Muslim woman, she can only marry a Muslim man. Now, some of you may say, why is that? That's not fair. She should be able to choose who she wants to marry. You know, that should be her right. She should be able to marry whoever she pleases. No, she can't. And the reason why she can't is, you know, if you listen to my previous calls, we know that men are the maintainers of women. So if a man is Christian and he's the maintainer of the woman, she has to obey her husband, and her husband is the head of the household. So her having children, they would follow the father's religion, which would be Christianity, and that takes away from Islam and the purpose of us creating a bigger ummah. And what we mean by ummah is the Muslim community. You know, we want to have a big Muslim community so that, you know, everybody understands that's the process. You know, be fruitful and multiply, as they say in the Bible, but that also applies to being Muslim. So if the Muslim woman married a Jew or a Christian, that child or their children would have to follow the way of the father, which would be against Islam. Now, for a Christian or a Jew, woman who marries a Muslim man, she understands that her children will be raised Muslim, will follow Islam. They will be Muslim. So that's one of the conditions of that marriage. If a Muslim man chooses to marry a woman of the book, a Christian or a Jew, that is one of the stipulations, that the children are raised in an Islamic home and also that they be Muslims. Now, you know, there's other religions out there, like you have Buddhists and Hindu and things like that. That is clearly against Islam, so a Muslim man could not marry a Hindu. He could not marry a Buddhist. And likewise for the woman, because, again, the Muslim woman, she has to marry a Muslim man. But a Muslim man cannot marry anyone else other than a Muslim woman, a Jew, or a Christian. She has to be one of those three in order for him to marry. Anything else is haram for him to marry. So, you know, I hope that clears that up. And there is Quranic passages that gives additional clarity to why you cannot. In Surah An-Nisa, which is 4:141, also in Surah Al-Baqarah, that's Surah number 2, that's Ayat 221, and it says, "And give not your daughters in marriage to a mushrik," or that means a non-believer, "till they believe in Allah alone." So that's a clear and concise definition of what is permissible for a Muslim woman. A Muslim woman can only marry a Muslim man. That's clear. A Muslim man can marry a Jew, a Christian, or another Muslim. He cannot marry a Hindu. He cannot marry a Buddhist. Those things go against the teachings of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and those types of religions are paganistic, very paganistic. So it deals in with, you know, a lot of things other than what is stipulated in the Quran, the Torah, which is the Old Testament, and the Injil, which is the New Testament. So anything outside of those three ranges go against Islam clearly, and they are forbidden for the Muslim man to marry. If he does, she is considered an idolater and so forth and so on. And those women are not permissible at all for Muslim men to marry. So in Hadith, there are four reasons why a man should seek marriage. And for those is may be married for her religion, her family, her wealth, and her beauty. But you should marry the religious woman, otherwise you would be amongst the losers. And that's in Surah Al-Baqarah. So, you know, being Muslim, when a Muslim man is going out to seek a woman for marriage, he's going to look at her beauty and, you know, want her to be pleasing to him, to his eye. That it's something he likes, it's something about her that interests her. That's going to be, you know, most of the time, that's what a man does. He's going to look at something that's appealing or attractive to his eye. He's also going to look at her wealth, like what type of family does she come from, what's her lineage, you know, who is her like her grandparents, who are her parents. Were they, you know, upstanding people within the community? You know, how did they earn a living? Also, is she religious? So, you know, not just that she's a woman that, you know, fasts when she's supposed to fast and prays when she's supposed to praise, but she's obedient to her husband. You know, and I did the rights of a husband and I did the rights of a wife. So, you know, obedience comes into a great part of the marriage. So these are things that a man should look for when he is seeking marriage, not just the beauty, not just the wealth, not just her family, but he should definitely take in consideration her religious values. Like, you know, is she somebody that's going to cover properly? Is she someone that has a firm foundation in taqwa? Does she understand Tawheed? Does she understand Aqidah? Because these things come into play with your marriage. So, you know, if brother so-and-so was out there chasing sister so-and-so, and he knew she was half covered half the time, didn't wear hijab or jilbab or overgarment or, you know, a burqa or a niqab, it's going to be kind of hard to get sister such and such to change her ways after marriage. So these should be things that you seek out and make sure you have a clear understanding that person's level of their religion. Also, you know, when you're seeking out a spouse, and I'll backtrack really quick, when you're seeking out a spouse, you should also take in consideration with this person, and this is for the brothers and this is for the sisters as well, is this person or would this person be a good parent? What is their tolerance level with children or how they interact with people? Do they have an irate attitude? Or are they someone who loses their cool very quickly? You know, these are things that should be asked when you're seeking marriage. Don't wait until after you're married and then complain about these things. This is why it's very important to ask questions, and this is why we have the sit-down process of getting to know your potential spouse. This is the time when you should be asking questions and also investigating your spouse, not on like a sneaky level or some kind of FBI, you know, and private investigator, but you should inquire about, you know, have you ever been arrested? These are important things because, you know, if these things come out later on in the marriage and causes a problem, you know, you really can't get upset with the person if they didn't disclose that information if you didn't ask. So, you know, important things that you should ask during the marriage is, you know, what's your family lineage? Like, you know, did your parents or grandparents have any medical conditions such as, like, you know, the cancer running your family a lot? Or, you know, were there mental health issues? Also, is there any hereditary diseases that run in your family? These things are important, and people forget to ask these type of questions because they get so caught up in just the marriage process. You know, sometimes these things bypass, and these are things that aren't asked. But this is also why you have your family involved in the process of getting married. Also, you know, this is why you have your wakil or your wali present during this entire process so that, you know, you don't get sidetracked either, or like, you know, the man or the woman doesn't get sidetracked in asking these potential very important questions, you know, during that process. So, you know, we have to be mindful that, you know, we don't get caught up in the pomp and circumstance of the whole marriage, you know, planning the marriage and getting marriage out of the way, but we also keep in forethought different things that, you know, may come up that are relatively important. You know, like people want to know if you're looking to purchase a house or a home. And, you know, if, you know, with Muslims, we don't deal with interest, which is considered riba. So, or even, you know, if you're seeking out, looking to rent a home or whatever, they may do a background check. So, you know, your credit is going to come into play. Also, you know, if, you know, God forbid, you know, inshallah, this doesn't happen, your spouse was, and they weren't able to, you know, financially take care of the family. Would you be able to step in until your spouse could get back on their feet? And this is for the sisters, like, you know, if your husband lost his job, would you be able to support the family until, you know, your husband was able to get back on his feet? Or, you know, God forbid, again, there has been certain circumstances where, you know, brothers have lost their limbs or their whole entire ability to work, so that then the financial burden comes on to the wife. You know, these are things that you should think about in retrospect to possibly happening. You know, you want to cover all areas and all avenues. I do see I have a question out there I'm going to put you through. And let me see here. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Do you have a question?
I'm actually guest on the program.
Okay. No, I seen that you pressed 1. So did you have a comment you wanted to make, or you just accidentally pressed it?
No, I pressed 1 because I was instructed to do so. I'm calling regarding the Islamic Heritage Month project.
Oh, okay. Now I remember, brother. Thank you so much. Okay, listeners, I had this brother call in. He's going to take 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes of our time, so that I spoke with your wife at the Eid. I remember this. So I do thank you so much for calling in. If you want to take the next 5 to 10 minutes so you can explain what's going on and so that the community is aware. Go ahead. You're on.
Thank you ever so much. I'm calling from the Islamic Heritage Month Project. For those of you who are unaware, Mayor Michael A. Nutter, the mayor of Philadelphia and the city of Philadelphia, have issued a official proclamation proclaiming the month of October as Islamic Heritage Month in Philadelphia. This is in concert with Islamic Heritage Month being celebrated or commemorated in October in Washington, D.C., in Manitoba, Canada, in Los Angeles, and in Florida as well. There's a national movement now to establish the month of October as Islamic Heritage Month. So with that, the Images of the Motherland Interactive Theater Cultural Development Committee of Masjid Allah, and the Council on American Islamic Relations have collaborated to produce 5 weekends of free public programming that commemorate the culture, the heritage, and the civilization of Islam during the month of October.
Okay. Any additional information you want to give us?
Yes. For those of you who are interested in the details regarding the programming, we just initiated our first 2 events this past Saturday and Sunday. We had Professor Amadou Shakur from the University of Barcelona, Spain, and Fez, Morocco, doing his presentations on the history of the Moors and the 5 great Islamic empires. This coming weekend, which is weekend number 2, all of the activities will be located at the Council on American Islamic Relations at 1501 Cherry Street. We're using 2 venues to do our productions. All of the dramatic, the theater, the musical, the performance, and visual arts-related projects are being hosted at Masjid Allah, the Center for Human Excellence. That's located at 7401 Limekiln Pike in Philadelphia. And all of the, I stand to correct myself, all except one of the movies are being presented on American Islamic Relations. So for weekend number 2, we have Friday, this coming Friday the 9th at 7 p.m., the movie Quran by Heart at the Council on American Islamic Relations. And then on Sunday, the 11th of October at 4 p.m., we have the documentary film Out of Cordoba, along with an antique Quran and Torah exhibit. We're featuring actual handwritten copies or folios and a mushaf of Quran that date from the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries. We also have a fine selection of folios that have been just recently added into our programming by the Islamic Heritage Foundation. This is something that you need to come and see, something that you need to come and photograph, bring your family members, your friends, etc. Case in point, the University of Penn Museum of Archaeology and History, they currently have an exhibit that's called Sacred Writings. And in that exhibit, there is one folio of the Quran from the 10th century that features Surah Nuh, or the story of the prophet Noah. They have a Latin Vulgate section in there that also deals with the story of Noah. They have the Torah that deals with the story of Noah also. And they're charging admission for you to come in and see this. Now, the admission's $20 to go to that museum and see one Quranic folio. At our productions, we have at least 16 to 20 different Quranic folios that are going to be on display, public display, for your examination and viewing, and the admission is free. There is no charge. So we urge you to come down, bring your friends, bring your family members, and see and experience all of the various cultural and contributory items that we're presenting that are relevant to the history and the culture of Islam. And the following weekend, weekend number 3, we have the movie Journey to Mecca. This is the movie that was being shown throughout the world. It was a movie that was on tour that was being shown in IMAX theaters. Well, we have that movie available, and we're going to be showing it at the Council on American-Islamic Relations on Friday, October the 16th. On Saturday the 17th, we have our official gala event, Songs in Praise of Allah. And in this particular event, we have a program that features songs and music that are originating from opposite sides of the Atlantic Ocean. From Morocco, we have the group Inove Ganawa. They will be performing. They will be the finale performance on this particular event. They represent one side of the Atlantic Ocean, and on the opposite side of the Atlantic Ocean, here in the Americas, representing the group Dawa Ensemble. So these are just some indications of some of the many things that we're doing. We have on Sunday, October the 18th, from 12 to 7 p.m., Islamic Art, The Mirror of the Invisible World. That's a film. Plus, we're having an artist demo by one of our local Muslim artists, Dennis Watson, Jr. Again, we have the archivist, the photographic archivist and historian, Fareed Newman, who's going to be presenting his photographic exhibit on the history of Islam in Philadelphia. And in addition to that, we have a juried student art exhibit on the theme of Islamic Heritage Month that's going to run from October the 14th through the 28th. So that's 2 weeks that these youths will be able to exhibit their artwork. And this is an open format production that is open to 10th to 12th grade applicants. Tri-state, that means Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware applicants can submit their artwork to be able to be shown and showcased in this particular art exhibit. The following weekend, number 4, we've got on Friday, October the 23rd, the movie Islam Africa to America at Masjid Allah. And the following day, we have the Living History Heritage Project and Forgotten Roots, which is Muslims in Early America. This has a special feature of two live dramatic productions. The story of Muhammad Ali ibn Said, number 292 from the United States Colored Troops. This is an African Muslim who came to America as a free man and fought in the Civil War for the freedom of African Americans. We also have the story of the life and times of Omar ibn Said, who wrote many documents in the Arabic language and is the only documented Muslim slave in America to write his own autobiography in the Arabic language. We've got a special added attraction courtesy of the Historical Society of Pennsylvania. Many of you probably are totally unaware of the fact that the man named Abdurrahman Ibrahim Ibn Sori. He's known as the Prince Among Slaves. He came to Philadelphia in the early 1800s, and he left some writing samples. He wrote Surah Fatiha as a letter that he gave to someone, and naturally, unfortunately, the owners of this had misidentified it, and they thought that this was the Lord's Prayer, but it's not. It's Surah Fatiha. So this document, along with the front page of the diary of the party that interviewed him, that tells his life story, how he was captured in Fort Jalon and brought to America, sold in Natchez, Mississippi, all those details there, you can see the actual handwritten document. This document has been under lock and key at 13th and Locust Street at the Historical Society of Pennsylvania. We're bringing out the digital files. They've graced us to be able to have the digital files so that we can show this document to the public, again, free of charge. On Sunday, October the 25th, 12 to 4 p.m., we have the master of Arabic calligraphy and Latin letters, Aisha Holland, who's coming to give a live demo, an exhibit. You're going to learn how to write your name in the Arabic language. You're going to learn how to write the Quran in the Arabic language. You're going to learn multiple forms of Arabic script. There's a wonderful demo that she's got planned along with a workshop. I urge you, please, come out and take advantage of this. And also we've got Forgotten Roots, which is a United States State Department-sponsored program that was commissioned out of the American Islamic Heritage Museum in Washington, D.C., by Amir Muhammad, who's the director there. It's got some profound multimedia about the history of Islam throughout the United States. On Friday, October the 30th, we go back to the Council on American Islamic Relations again for the movie Muhammad, Legacy of a Prophet. On Saturday, October the 31st, we've got a dramatic theater production called Forbidden Love. And also we've got two additional dates for the Quranic Manuscript Antique Exhibit, which will be on Sunday, October the 11th, and it will be that's at the Council on American Islamic Relations, and on Saturday and Sunday, October the 24th and October the 25th. We're giving away free publications, free educational publications to teachers who bring groups of 10 or more students out to experience our program. We've got a lot in store for you, much more than what I've elaborated on. To get information, you can go on eventbrite.com. We're asking people to register by Eventbrite so that we know how to make the seating arrangements based on the number of people that have registered to show up. If, unfortunately, you can't go on Eventbrite, we are accepting walk-in registrants, free of charge. Come down. Bring your families, your friends, your neighbors. This program is open to everyone, both Muslim and non-Muslim. We welcome them all. The number to call for additional information, if you want a phone number, 215-848-3651. That's 215-848-3651. Or you can go to our Facebook pages, facebook.com/Islamic Heritage Month. Or facebook.com/groups, Islamic Heritage Month, and then a / at the end. Please, 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 don't miss this wonderful opportunity to enrich your lives, your culture, your heritage. Bring your children, bring your grandchildren, bring your great-grandchildren, and let them see and experience this wonderful collective of the finest various artifacts, performance artists, visual artists, that we could gather to bring here to commemorate Islamic Heritage Month in Philadelphia.
Well, assalamu alaikum. That was, alhamdulillah, that was very, very informative. I appreciate you taking the time to give us a very descriptive detail of all the events. I do have the flyer that your wife provided me. So what I'll do is once I'm done with the call, I'll, like, take screenshots of it and put it out on my page so that everyone can review the information that you provided. I do appreciate you calling in and giving us that wonderful information, because I didn't even know it was going to be so elaborate what was going on. I thought it was just a couple of venues, but from what you explained, it's going to be much more than that. So, inshallah, I hope I have the opportunity to come out and, you know, visit some of the venues. So, again, I appreciate it. And I'll try to remind myself to, continue throughout the month of October to make those announcements. Or if you want to call in, I'm on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays if you just want to give us a brief review of what's going on for that particular week or that weekend. You're more than welcome to come on.
Yes, and we want to remind your audiences that there are 5 weekends of activities. We've just completed weekend number 1. We've got 4 more to go. We need and we want to see you there. We've got a new greeting now in Philadelphia, and that greeting, after you give salam to someone, Happy Islamic Heritage Month. And if they don't have a clue what you're talking about, then you take a moment and you inform them and have them come on board and come on down and enjoy and partake of the experience of Islamic Heritage Month.
Well, thank you again for joining, and I do appreciate it. I'll make sure I give my audience and my listeners that information so that, you know, we can participate in it. Again, I thank you very much for joining the call.
Thank you. May Allah bless you.
You're welcome. Inshallah. So I see we do have a couple other people waiting. I'm going to go to, I have a 215. I'm going to cut through and let these people talk and see if they have any additional questions. And then I'll get back to the topic at hand. Give me one second. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
You have a question or a comment?
Oh, you know what? It was answered.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll put you back on hold then. And I do have one other person calling from a 302 area code. I'm going to put you through now. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Did you have a question or a comment?
You know, I was trying to figure out, I may have dialed the wrong one. The other number had me on hold, so I was trying to wait to get through. I'm just here to listen for the topic that's at hand. I don't have any questions.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I'll go ahead. Once it lights up on my dashboard, I see it. And so I try to see if everybody's going to, you know, ask their questions. So I'm going to just go ahead and put you back on hold, and I'll just finish the topic. I just had to do that quick advertisement. So I'm going to just put you back on hold. F-mine. Okay. So we're talking about the marriage process in Islam. And before the advertisement, I just want to, you know, go through what we covered so far. So we found out that men are able to marry women of the book, which include Christians or Jews or Muslim women. For Muslim women, we can only marry a Muslim man. We found out that a man should marry for 4 things. That would be her wealth, her beauty, her family, and her religion. And the best out of those 4 is her religion. Also, we covered that, you know, in the process of getting married, there are certain questions and also questions and things that you should ask prior to getting married, because these things could come up and cause a concern during the marriage. And if you would have asked these before marriage, you possibly could have got the answer you needed. It may have deterred you from marrying that person, but at least you knew what you were getting yourself into. So, you know, again, we should ask questions. That's part of the marriage process, is to ask questions. We cover genetic possibilities. You know, it could be your criminal background. It could be your educational background, things of that nature. You want to, you know, ask when you're seeking to potentially get married to someone. So, you know, those things are important. Also genetics, because, you know, you could have sickle cell and you didn't know you had the trait, and your husband possibly has the trait. Your child will have sickle cell disease, which is not a good disease to have because it causes a lot of health complications. So, you know, these are questions that should be asked during the, I want to say, the, you know, sit-down period when you're seeking marriage and you're looking to get married. So the four, there's four components of getting married. The first one is consent. The next one is the permission or the acknowledgement of the walil or the wakil for the nikah to take place. You need witnesses and also the mare or dowry. And I'll break those down for you so that you can understand which each component states. So the first component is consent. In Islam, you cannot force marriage. We do not do arranged marriages in Islam. To give your consent, you have to be of age to give your consent to marry. Now, with Muslims, we do consider if a child, or I'm not even going to say a child, if a woman has reached the age of puberty where she has her menses, she can get married. Does that happen in today's time? No, not often. But she can get married because she's able to bear children. And that shows that she has reached the status of adulthood. If you're able to bear children, that is considered adulthood in Islam. So, you know, she can get married. If a boy reaches the age of puberty, he can get married. Now, will he be financially able? Probably not, because he probably will still be in school. But if he insists and if he has some kind of financial, you know, stability, he can do that. You know, you do have teenagers that work jobs and so forth and so on and continue in school. So that man would be able to get married if he's of age of consent, which is puberty. In order for a female to give her consent to marry, she either has to say yes, or we know that in Sahih al-Bukhari, and also Muslim, if the young girl is shy, she, you know, is not very boisterous or, you know, upfront, upcoming, her silence is also taken as a consent. So, you know, like, you don't say nothing. And, you know, your wakil or your walil and your other family members know that you do want to marry this brother. You know, that is no forcing. There's no coercion, like, you better marry him. You better not disappoint the family. We don't do that in Islam. And your marriage would be invalid anyway if it was a forced marriage. That marriage is not valid if it's forced or coerced in any manner. So the second condition is, and this is narrated in Ahmad, Abu Daud, and Tirmidhi. Hadith, which is all Sahih, that there is no marriage without the consent of the wali or the wakil. So the wakil is someone who is a blood relative in your family, someone who is a non-mahram to you. And what that means is it's somebody in your family that you cannot marry. So that would be your brother, your uncle, your grandfather, your father. But there's levels to that. So when you do get married, if your father is alive, then he would be your wakil. If your father is deceased, it then goes to, not sure if it's your brother or your uncle, whoever's the next Muslim member of your family. Now, it can be your male cousin. But we have to be clear on this. You can marry your male cousins. because it states in Quran, they are lawful for you to marry. Do we do this in this age and time? No. But you can marry your cousin. It is halal for you to do so. We don't practice it. We don't do it, but it is lawful for you to do. So that's, you know, another little tidbit I'm throwing out there, that you should be covered around your male cousins because you can marry your male cousins. And, you know, that list goes on and on and on, but I'll save that for another day. You need two witnesses. So on top of your wakil or your wali would be somebody who's appointed to you as, I want to say, a guardian or advisor over the whole marriage process for you. And this should be somebody who is upstanding and trustworthy, that would look out for your benefit. My brother is my wakil. So my brother is definitely going to look out for me as he would his own daughter. When you seek kill, well, a wali, if you don't have a male Muslim member in your family, there should be somebody, and this is me saying this, this is not what's listed. It should be somebody basically who's going to look out for you as they would their own daughter or their own mother or their own sister. You want somebody, not Joe Blow, who's your intended friend or whoever have you. No, this should be somebody that's going to dig deep into the background of this brother to make sure that he's a upstanding Muslim in the community. This is not somebody shady. This is not somebody that's going to do you wrong. And that's the job of the wakil to do that. So when some sisters bypass that process and you get Joe Blow or whoever, or you force your wakil or your wali to say, you know, your agreement with this marriage, and they do it, and then the marriage failed, don't blame anybody but yourself. So, sisters, if you're online and you don't have somebody who's a Muslim member of your family, go to the masjid. Exactly what I said. Go to the masjid and sign up for one. You don't want to get somebody who's not going to do their homework. You want to make sure that this brother is in the clear. You want to make sure that this person is somebody who is upstanding and trustworthy and, you know, would not cause harm to you, your children, to anything about you that, you know, you would have a good, long-lasting marriage until death, until you two are reunited in Jannah, inshallah. So that's the part of, you know, the wakil. You need the witnesses, so you need two. If you do two witnesses, now, if it's two men, that's fine. So you need two witnesses. If they're women, you're going to need four altogether. So on top of the two witnesses, depending if they're male, then you only need two. But if they're female, you're going to need four, because we know in the Quran, it states that the man has one degree over the woman, and because she is in a defect, and we're not talking about, you know, you're crazy and all like that, he has the authority over that, so it should be two. So you should have two women witnesses for every one male witness. You need the wakil. Of course, you need the bride, and you need the groom. Also, so the last part is the mare or the dowry. So in Surah Nisa, ayat number 4, it says, and give to the woman their dowry with a good heart. But if they out of their own good pleasure remit any part of it to you, take it and enjoy it without any fear or harm. So say the dowry, and I want to break this down real quick too. So that it's clear and understood. In some cultures, they separate the mare from the dowry. And I'll break this down, because in Quran, it states mare, M-A-H-R. It does not state dowry. Now, with breaking it down out the Arabic language into the English language, it sort of separates itself. Within some cultures, the mare is strictly for the wife. So that's a gift that the husband gives the wife. The family has no hands in it. They can't take that from the wife. In some cultures, they consider the dowry the gift for the parents. So your potential husband would give a gift to your mother, father, those who are marrying you off as a gift of thanks. For you, for the wife, it would be the mare, which would be whatever he decides to give you, whatever was agreed upon in your contract, that would be acceptable to you, and your family can't take that away from you. He can't take that away from you. Now, if you want to give part of that back, say, like, you know, your dowry was $5,000, and you want to give the brother back $2,500, like, no, I'm cool, I'm good with $2,500. You can keep the other $2,500. There's no harm in him doing it as long as you're offering it. Now, we didn't get into all this when I did my call on divorce, but sisters, be careful when you ask for a cooler, because in a cooler divorce, you have to ask your husband, does he want the dowry back? And he can say, yes, I want it back. Or he can say, no, I don't want it back. So when setting your mare or your dowry, be careful about what you ask for. And also keep in mind that we shouldn't be getting married with the intention of divorce. That's not what we do. So, but keep in mind that if you do ask for a cooler, he can request you pay him back. Or he can say, no, you know, I'm good, let her keep it. So that those are some of the things that, you know, we do in Islam that's different from Christianity, because, you know, like, hey, she get a $10,000 ring. If they divorce, she ain't got to get that back. We don't do that in Islam. So that's one of the differences. You know, so here's some surahs that speak on marriage. 65:7, supporting the wife. 66:6, educating one family. Obeying your husband, Surah 4, ayat number 34. And kind treatment to your wife, Surah Nisa, which is number 4, verse 19. So this is how the process goes, other than, you know, the four components that I just spoke of. You know, those were the components of a marriage, but this is the actual process. So, for one, you have the proposal process, and that is a brother seeking a sister out for marriage. So that would be, and we know we don't have conversations with brothers, secret conversations, because the third party in those conversations is the shaitan. So we want to do everything on the up and up. Because what starts out halal ends halal, inshallah. What starts off haram ends haram. So we want to make sure that these marriages are legit and, you know, everything is on the up and up. So the proposal process, the brother says, sister such and such, I'm interested in marrying you. You say, okay, I'm interested in getting married. Here is my wakil or my wali's number. You take yourself out the process. Your wakil and your wali will be the middleman and will do all the negotiating and, you know, the finagling, whatever they got to do to set this up. So second step is the engagement process. Now, some people say, oh, we don't do engagements in Islam, and that's true, but you have a period called the intentions period. This is where, you know, the proposal has been set. I'm interested in marrying this sister. You agree to possibly choosing this person as your husband or your spouse. So you start the process of, you know, preparing for the marriage. So you're going to have these sit-downs, and you're going to ask these questions that I said you should ask about health, you know, financial things of that nature, how many kids you want, you know, do you want to move out of state? You know, how's your health? What your finances look like? Your educational levels? These are the things that's going to happen in that process. So with the engagement process, the brother is
able to see the sister one time without her hijab on in front of her family, not like some secret thing where he's off and y'all off together and you take off your kimar or your jilbab or whatever you have on to conceal yourself in front of him. No, this is done in front of the family. Now, I'm not saying you come out there with a tight-fitting mermaid dress on. No, you come out there, you know, regularly dressed without your kimar on. If you're wearing niqab, you can take your niqab off so that he can see your face, so that he can see if he would still be interested in you after this process. But that happens once. It's not like every time y'all have a sit-down, you taking your kimar off and you flaunting around. So, no, it's once, and it's done in front of the family. So then step three is the nikah or the mayor. So you set a date that y'all going to have the marriage done, and this is usually done inside the masjid. Not saying that it can't be done in the home. It can be. So, you know, you're going to have somebody perform the marriage, and, you know, the mayor or the dowry will be exchanged. You will sign the marriage contract. That will all take place that day. And the last part is the walima, or the reception, takes place after this. Now, the walima should be something simple. It shouldn't be extravagant. It shouldn't be elaborate. It shouldn't be a burden on your husband. It shouldn't be a burden on you. It shouldn't be a burden on your family. It shouldn't take away from you financially where you're repaying all this debt back just to get married. So it should be something simple. You know, your family, your friends, you know, intimate, like, you know, an intimate setting. It could be in your home. It could be, you know, a small hall or something like that. We don't do, like, these lavish weddings like you see on TV. Now, if you can afford it and it's not going to cause a burden, it's not going to cause, you know, strife and heartache on your family, if that's something that you can afford, then you can do it. But if it's not within your means, you shouldn't do it. I mean, make it easy. Make it easy on the brothers. Make it easy on yourself. Because, you know, at the end of the day, and, you know, I always say this, people prepare for the wedding. They don't prepare for the marriage. I'm going to open up the call again if anybody has any questions or comments. You can call in at 805-727-7013 and press 1, and I will put you through. If not, I will continue with the call. You know, marriage is half our deen. This is something that we seek out. We know, being Muslims, this is something that's required of us. Just like we have to do our 5 daily prayers, our fasting during Ramadan, the potential to make Hajj. Getting married is a very intricate and important part of Islam. And the reason for that is so that we can increase the ummah. Second of all, it lowers, you know, crime rates and, you know, things of that nature, people getting raped and molested, all kinds of things, because when you're married, it's a special bond that you have with your spouse. It's not, you know, some boyfriend-girlfriend type thing, and that's something that we don't do in this land. We don't do boyfriend and girlfriend. You're either single or you're married. Single or married. Now, if the brother has placed intentions on you, you can say that I'm intended. Someone has placed intentions on me. Because if you have already signed the contract, no other person can place intentions on you. We want to clear that up. We have to make that clear that, you know, once the intentions have been set and the contract has been signed, which usually happens the same day as your marriage, but in some cultures and customs, the contract is signed days ahead or weeks ahead of time. And then, you know, you have the actual nikah, and that's performed, and then you have the walima. Some cultures do it all separate. Some do it all together. Another thing that we should try to do, we shouldn't try to imitate the non-believers. So we shouldn't have, you know, these elaborate gowns and all the stuff. We don't do the bridesmaids. We don't do all that stuff. During the walima, you can have the duff drum played, but no other instrument. This is in hadith that, you know, during a marriage, you could play the duff drum. And y'all can investigate that and, you know, find additional information on that. It's not hard to find. You can go to Islam Question, which is islamqa.com, and just type in duff in the search field, and you'll be able to find hadith in Quran that states that that's permissible to do. You know, these things, I learn things every time I do these calls because I do, you know, research. I look things up. I investigate, you know, everything that I'm going to do on a call. So it gives me the chance and the opportunity to be able to grow in my knowledge in Islam as well. Because there's some things I don't know. I've been Muslim for 23 years, and you will never know everything that you need to know about Islam. That's the one of the most beautiful things about the religion, is that you should seek knowledge every day. You should seek these things out because they're readily available to you. Not like, you know, past times where you had to go to the library, you had to research things. You know, you can find out a lot of information online, you know, but just make sure you're getting it from reputable sources. When you do get that information, just make sure you're going to the correct places to get that information. But, you know, these things are something that I take to heart. Like, these are things that I appreciate. These are things that I think that the community should know. Some people don't know. Some people are too scared to ask. Some people don't even know where to go to get this information. So this is why I do these calls, so that I can bring education and awareness to the community. You know, people, it's Muslims, non-Muslims that's listening to this call. You have people not only in the region that I'm in, we have people from all over the country calling into these calls. You know, I can see on my board the area codes that come through. So I see people from all over the country calling in, which I appreciate each and every last one of you. Alhamdulillah, I appreciate it because, you know, you can take this information back and pass it on to someone who may need it. All of these calls are available for playback on blogtalkradio.com/Imam Alfred. You would just need to look for my name, Qadira Muhammad, and that would list you the day that I gave the particular talk for that day or the topic for the day. I do my calls on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, always at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You know, I always make it available if somebody has a question. I see, no, same number. I thought somebody had wanted to chime in. But I just want to give you my contact information. If you want to call me, feel free to do so 24 hours a day. Not necessarily will I answer the phone, because this is my business line, but you can leave me a voicemail message or you can text me. My number is 610-836-2120. You can reach me via email at qamrma@gmail.com. You can go on any social network, Facebook, Instagram, Path, Twitter, and you can use Religion Means Alive as a hashtag, or you can search my name. I also go under Hardy Hummus, so if you want to search me there, you can inbox me on those various social networks. And inshallah, I'll try to get back to you as soon as possible, if I can. Again, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining in tonight and participating, and also with the advertisement we have for the Islamic Heritage Month in the month of October. Inshallah, I will try to make note to put that information out there, because that is something that is very good and positive for the community, and we should try to participate if we can, inshallah. Again, thank everyone for joining tonight. I want to thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for giving me the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to be able to take the information that I read and put it down and speak and communicate this information to you in a layman's term way. You know, some people speak so high level that you don't understand and you're like, that went right over my head. But I try to break it down to a more, you know, understandable level so that everybody can, you know, take the information and use it as they need. Again, I'm Qadira Aisha Muhammad. This is Blog Talk Radio, Religion Means Alive, for today's date, which is October the 5th, 2015. And today's topic was the marriage process in Islam. So, again, I'm going to get ready to sign off. I appreciate everybody for joining. I appreciate all my listeners. Stay tuned for future broadcastings and check the website for playback. Assalamu alaikum and have a good night, everyone.